Oh, I'm so glad you're here. I'm glad all of you have come. I'm just so excited to tell you my story. The only problem is I don't have much time. I'm sorry that it worked out this way, but I have this very important meeting. Paul and Barnabas have come up from Antioch, and they've come here for this meeting with the elders and the apostles here in the church. And it starts in just a few moments, so I'll have to keep this short. But I could take all day to tell you my story. It's such, well, an ordinary story and an extraordinary story. You see, my name is James. You know me? I am the brother of Jesus. Now, I suspect that you may think that because I grew up in the same family as Jesus, that it was very easy for me to believe that he was the Messiah. But let me tell you, it was not easy. In fact, growing up in the family with Jesus, I think made it far more difficult for us to believe in him. You see, I know the picture that many people have of Jesus is that everything about him was extraordinary. But I have to tell you, in our family, he was really pretty ordinary. I mean, when we all got hungry and we crowded up to the table, Jesus was crowding up to the table with the rest of us. Simon, Jude, my little sisters. And when we were really hungry, I can tell you, there was never a time when he said, "Hey, James, let's go out back and I'll turn some stones into bread." And when we were thirsty, he never turned any water into grape juice. It just didn't happen. No, in my experience with my brother, it was like everyone's experience with your brothers or sisters. He was my big brother. He looked out after me. He was a responsible, a good kid. But Messiah? None of us in the family could believe he was the Messiah. Oh, I don't know what Mom and Dad may have believed about him, but I can tell you that Simon and Jude and I, we just thought he was our big brother. I mean, when you spend your life with someone and sleep in the same bed with them sometimes and you eat with them and they're just a normal person, how do you expect them to be something amazing? No, Jesus was, well, he was a fine young boy. When we played games, he was as competitive as the rest of us. I mean, just because he was my big brother didn't mean that he let me win. In fact, he won most of the games. That is until I got a little bit older, and then I beat him a time or two. No, just like you would expect in a family. And I have a hard time and had a hard time as a child believing there was anything special about him, because he certainly didn't seem like a Messiah, like a savior. I mean, there was the time that he was with me and we were out behind the house in Papa's woodshed, where he kept all of his scrap for working in the carpentry shop. And as we were playing there, along came some no good young men. And they threatened us. And you see this scar? This scar right here? That's where they beat us. He was no savior to me that day. There were no bears that he called out of the woods to come and take care of those young men. There were no angels that swooped down to save us. No, we were beaten black and blue. And yes, he was a good boy. And I suppose that growing up in our family, he may have set a standard that made mom and dad expect a little bit more from us. Like, I remember the day that Jude and I were in Papa's carpentry shop. And there was a scrap piece of wood there, and I don't know to this very day whether Jude took that scrap of wood and hit me on the side of the head by accident or whether it was on purpose. But as soon as he did, I turned around and I decided that I would teach him what it means to beat up on his brother. And so I started to pound him, and my papa pulled us apart. And he looked over and he said, "Why can't you boys be more like Jesus?" As I pounded Jude in the head, I said, "Yeah, why can't you be more like Jesus?" Oh, he was a good boy. Oh, but he got in trouble himself, you know. It's not exactly what you might think about him. There was that time when he was 12 years old. I remember he was 12 because Papa said to him, "Jesus, you're a young man now. This is a special occasion for you." And we went with Mama and Papa to Jerusalem. Every year we went to Jerusalem at Passover time. And this was no exception. They always made that part of the family tradition. And so all of us, Simon and Jude and myself and Jesus and our little sisters, we all went with Mom and Dad and all the cousins. It was a big group that went to Jerusalem. And it was a festive occasion, as you know, Passover is. Everyone was celebrating. It was a special time. But then when it came time to go, we all got the family together. Mama was very careful about the little ones. She made sure that she had them close to us, but she didn't worry too much about Jesus and me. I mean, Jesus was 12 years old, and I was just a few years younger. And so they really didn't pay much attention to us. That is, until we had traveled about a day's journey from Jerusalem. Mama looked around and she realized that Jesus wasn't with the family, and she went to the cousins and Jesus was not with any of us. And she turned to Joseph. She said, Joseph, where's Jesus? How could you let him get away?" I knew that somehow this was going to all come back to me. And I said, James, you were with him last. Where is he?" I said, "I don't know. He's my older brother. I don't have to keep an eye on him." And so we all headed back to Jerusalem to look for Jesus. My 12-year-old older brother. I wasn't worried about him. He was older than I was. He could take care of himself. I didn't worry about him the first day. But we went all to all the normal places where we expected to find him, and Jesus wasn't there. And the next day I could tell that the mama was getting a little bit frantic, and Papa was more than a little concerned. And we searched Jerusalem, and he wasn't there, and that's when everyone began to get a little frantic. My littlest sister said, "Jesus, where's Jesus? What happened to Jesus?" We didn't know. The third day, Papa turned to me and said, James, you were with him most of all. James, tell us, where were you last with Jesus? I said, the last time we were together was in the temple. Imagine anyone spending any extra time in the temple. But there were no other places to look, so we all ran to the temple, and as we got there, my little sister said, Jesus! It's Jesus! And there he was. He was just seated over there with the rabbis, the teachers. I could tell they were very impressed with my older brother. But you know who wasn't very impressed? My mother. She was not impressed with him at all. She went over to Jesus and first she threw her arms around him. She said, Jesus, I'm so glad we found you. And then she held him by the lapels and she said, how could you treat us like this? The whole temple heard her say it. And do you know what my brother said to my mother? He said, you should have known that I would be in my Father's house. What did he mean by that? I had no idea. But I knew what would happen when he got back to my Father's house in Nazareth. Oh, it was going to be quite a scene. No, he was just an ordinary young man. And so that's why I really didn't know what to think when he decided that he was going to go out and to preach the good news. I can tell you this, that was not good news for me. I mean, at this time, we'd lived together for almost, he was 30 years, I was about 26. We'd lived together a long time. And in that time frame, our papa had died. And so, mama was dependent upon us kids to take care of her. And because Jesus was the oldest, the primary responsibility fell to him. Now, with papa gone, the responsibility for running the shop fell to Jesus and to me and to Simon and a little bit to Jude. And because there were several of us doing the work of one, we actually were able to expand the shop and we were able to make it very profitable. And Jesus, he was the one who pretty much ran everything. So when he said he was leaving to preach the good news, I thought, what's going to happen to the business? What's going to happen to Mama? And then I realized he was expecting me. He was expecting me to take over for him. I mean, in the meantime, I had gotten married. Jesus was always too busy doing everything else to have much interest in women. He had so much time on his hands. But I had gotten married. I now had a little child. And I thought, I've got so much going on in my life. And now he's put this on me to take care of Mom. And I have to run the business. I thought, and I even told him. I said, you are selfish and you are inconsiderate. How dare you leave us? But he did. And I have to say that I was a little bit concerned for him. I mean, what was he going to do? How was he going to put food on his table? Where would he lay his head at night? How would he take care of himself? But he left. And at first, he just had a handful of misfits. He called disciples. Now, I didn't have time, even if I had wanted to go out and be with him. I had too many responsibilities that my brother had left me with. But I heard the stories. I heard that that group of 12 became hundreds and then thousands. And I heard stories. There were people who said that Jesus claimed to be the Messiah. They believed he was the coming king. And they even said that my brother, did miracles. I didn't know what to think. But we heard that he was so busy in his ministry that he wasn't really taking good care of himself. And word got back to Mama that Jesus wasn't even eating. He was so busy. He was just consumed. Mama said, that boy, he's gonna kill himself in his ministry. And I knew that while some were saying that he was the king, the Messiah, the respected religious leaders didn't share that opinion. In fact, some of them said that he was possessed by a demon. I decided it was time for a little family intervention. And so all of us went out and we caught up with Jesus. And we let it be known in the crowd that we were here to see him, that we needed to talk to him. We said, let him know that his mother and brothers are here. And do you know what he said? You know what he said? He said, who are my mother and my brothers? But these who do the will of my Father. We never got close to him that day. And I decided, if he doesn't want help, if he doesn't think he needs help, then he won't get any help from me. But I knew that what everyone else may have believed was not what those of us who were closest to him believed. He was just an ordinary man from an ordinary family from a small little town of Nazareth. Nazareth, are you familiar with Nazareth? Most people don't know much about it. It's just a forgotten little town. In fact, you know what they say about Nazareth? They say, nothing good ever came out of Nazareth. Oh, there may have been some people who were looking for the Messiah. Not very many people. But if they were looking, they were looking in Jerusalem. If they were looking, they were looking among the families of means, among the priestly families. I assure you this, no one ever came to Nazareth looking for the Messiah. They weren't going to find him there. And yet, not too many years ago, at Passover, everything changed. We had once again, as a family, made our trip down to Jerusalem. Things were a little different this time. Papa wasn't with us anymore. And Jesus wasn't with us. He was out with his disciples sharing the good news. But I got the family together and we went back once again for Passover to celebrate this special religious and family and national occasion. But this time, things were different. When we got to Jerusalem, instead of the normal festive attitude, there was a tension. And I knew why things were so tense. There was a rumor that Jesus was in town, and in fact, I knew that he was. He'd come there with his disciples, and the rumor was that he had come and he had said that he was the Messiah. There were people who believed he was the king. They believed that he was coming to set up his kingdom. And I knew how well that would go over with the Roman authorities. With those who occupied our country, I thought, That's not a good thing to let be known. And I already knew what the Jewish leaders thought of him. Didn't surprise me that there were those tensions. But that night we met as a family and we did what we always did at every Passover. We celebrated the delivery of our people, the Jews, from the Egyptians. We remembered how the lamb was sacrificed and how they dripped his blood on the doorposts, and that everyone who had the blood of the lamb on the doorpost was freed from death. And even as we were celebrating in the shadows, they had arrested my brother. The Jewish leaders and some Romans came and they caught him in the garden and they arrested him. And before I even knew what was going on, this festive, wonderful occasion had turned into a nightmare. We heard that they had accused him of blasphemy. They'd accused him of treason. They wanted to kill him. And in a few short hours, it went from remembering our deliverance to praying for deliverance for my brother. I stood there in the streets of Jerusalem that day, and I expected that Pilate would speak wisdom and calm everything down. I thought he would dispense Roman justice and everything would be okay. But all he said was, "I wash my hands of it all." And he turned my brother over to the bloodthirsty crowd so that he would be crucified. Now, I did not believe that my brother was the Messiah, but I knew he was no traitor, no blasphemer. I followed him outside the city to that place called Golgotha, the skull. I watched as they stretched him out and they drove nails into his hands and into his feet. And they hung him between heaven and earth to die. I tell you, I couldn't stay there and watch my brother die. I headed back to Jerusalem, and I just cried out to God in my tears. I said, "God, how can you allow such an injustice? You see what is happening on this earth. How could you allow this to happen?" But he did. And when it was finished, I knew there was nothing on this earth that would ever bring my brother back to me. Oh, a few days later, there were rumors. There were rumors that the disciples had stolen his body. The tomb was empty. It was obvious to everyone. But some were saying that he had risen from the dead. He was alive. I couldn't believe that. Who believes that a family member that they put in the grave will come back to life? I didn't. But I knew that Pilate had placed soldiers there to guard the tomb, and I didn't think that those band of misfits that he called disciples could have stolen his body either. I didn't know what to think. I'm sorry. My time is almost up. But I did want to tell you how I got to be a leader in the church. How I got to be from the skeptic to a follower of Jesus and a leader in his church. And I can tell you what happened in four words. He appeared to me. It was not some sort of vague vision, not some sort of out-of-body experience. It was Jesus, my brother, in the flesh. He appeared to me. And it was then that I knew that it was all true. He was the Messiah. The things he claimed were absolutely trustworthy. I had seen him. As clear as you are before me and I am before you, he stood before me and he said, James, believe. I realized at that moment that what happened on that awful Friday was not just a gross travesty of justice. It was a gracious, gracious justice by God, for me, and for you. That the Messiah came, and he died, not because of what he had done, but because of what we had done. And in that one moment, when I saw Jesus alive from the dead, I realized that this was not anything ordinary. This was extraordinary. This was miraculous. God had stepped into the world and intervened in history through my brother. He is risen. He is risen indeed. That is no ordinary news. That is extraordinary, miraculous news. The Messiah has come. The only hope for all mankind. I must go, but I hope perhaps today, you'll give a little thought to what I've told you.